Hey, Mike.
Hi, Caleb. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little bit tired, but I'm head down, power through. I'm making it work.
Getting ready for Halloween?
Sure, let's say that.
Okay. What are you drinking tonight?
tonight I am drinking an Applejack Rabbit. A very autumnal cocktail out of the PDT book. Which I'm actually kind of surprised I hadn't made. I looked at the spreadsheet and I have not made it yet. It is one of my favorites because it involves the Laird's Applejack, the Applejack brandy, which is delightful and kind of makes everything taste like autumn.
Mm-hmm.
So I am enjoying that this week. How about you? What are you drinking?
I am trying a new drink as well, and I made it thematic, hopefully. It's called The Judgment Day.
Oh, that's and like T2. Is,
well, no, yeah, or, you know, meet your master, meet the stock market and Wall Street. It's got pisco, lemon, lime, egg white, elderflower, and absinthe rinse.
Oh, interesting.
It's very tasty.
Yours sounds a little more sophisticated than mine.
Maybe, but, you know, it's very tasty, and it's got lemon and lime. That's kind of unusual.
Oh. All right, yeah. I'm using, mine has a lemon and orange.
So okay.
We both went with lemon plus.
Double citrus.
Excellent.
So this is one of our favorite episode types, category of episode, because it's an earnings call, quarterly earnings, four times a year.
It's our little Christmas Eve or day.
Yes.
Or Boxing Day, I guess. We're like a day afterwards. Isn't that what Canadians do?
Yep.
All right.
And the UK, I think. And so this was supposed to be a really big quarter. Elon had been promising and alluding to that they would be profitable and have free cash flow, and not only profitable in like the non-GAAP way, but in the GAAP official way. And going into it, most analysts did not expect them to have profits. They still expected a loss of, you know, somewhere between 50 cents and 60 cents a share on around $5 billion or so in revenue. And Tesla absolutely crushed the quarter. They did incredibly well. They did $6.8 billion in revenue. They did $1.8 per share in income. So
they couldn't get it to $4.20 per share?
No, they couldn't. Last quarter, they were negative 422, though, so kind of close.
Okay,
but this is the second time they've ever been profitable for a quarter, and this is very heavily profitable. With 83,775 deliveries, 56,000 Model 3 and 27,000 Model S and X, which compares to 18,500 Model 3s last time and 22,000 Model S and X. So huge increase in the deliveries, which we knew about. But the gross profit went to $1.5 billion compared to $600 million the previous quarter. So the margins improved pretty dramatically. So we'll get to that in a bit. And then they had $420 million in profit before interest expense compared to a loss last period of $621 million loss. So that's a swing of about $1 billion.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B. And net income, like real bottom line income for common shareholders, was $312 million, which came out to $1.82 per share. And they increased their total cash. So all these stories of Tesla continuing to burn cash are not true. They had $881 million in free cash flow and ended the quarter with $3.5 billion in cash.
When you say per share, does that mean they're paying out a dividend, or is that just like, you know, breaking it down for numerical purposes?
Yep, just numerical purposes. Okay. Tesla does not do a dividend.
Okay.
And so how did this happen? Like, well, where did those numbers come from? So they did $2.8 billion more in revenue.
Wait, are you asking yourself questions?
Sorry.
I've been made totally redundant here.
Sorry.
Literally, the only thing I can do is ask you questions and you talk about them.
All right, let's rewind.
No, that's fine. Just carry on. You actually did it better.
Sorry.
It's fine. It's just, you know, humiliating. Humbling. Humbling, maybe. I don't know.
They had
I'll just sip my cocktail.
$2.8 billion more in revenue, And automotive revenue was the primary driver of that, with a 82% increase sequentially over Q2. And the majority of that came from Model 3. They did $880 million more in gross profit. And the reason that happened was they not only had better overall margins on the cars, but they actually saved $140 million on operating expenses over the previous quarter, which is quite unusual. So they did, you know, $2+ billion more in sales, but they almost $3 billion more in sales, but they spent less on their staff.
So well, they had less. They don't have to build factory buildings now. They just work out of tents. It's like running a food truck versus a restaurant, right? You know, lowering your overhead.
They had less R&D, partly because Model 3 now is like pretty much fully ramped up, so they don't have to account for any of those costs. And then the selling and administrative costs went down, and the restructuring costs from the layoffs they had last period also were pretty much gone for the severances and things. So the team right-sizing they did last quarter and the layoffs they did show up this period. So
Does any of the SEC stuff show up here, or is that still like pending?
It's still pending. I didn't see anything around that, but that would have been just around $20 million. So,
drop in the bucket.
It would have been pretty pretty small. I mean, it would have gone to around $290 million in income. So they still would have been profitable with that. So that wasn't even a material impact. And they had $1 billion more in operating income and $1 billion more in net income, like a swing quarter to quarter. So it's pretty big difference. And they also, not only did they get $800 million in cash, they paid off $84 million in debt. So they paid off one of their bonds that was coming due. And one of the things that people on Wall Street have been saying about Tesla was, well, they may be able to have some profits with the Model 3, but they have this $80 million debt payment coming up. And then in Q1, they've got a couple $100 million in debt. And then, in Q4, they have that. And then in Q1 next year, they've got like many hundreds of million, like 500, 800, 900 million. But Elon and Tesla continue to affirm that they are going to pay it off versus refinance it. So that's actually going to be quite interesting to see, because this is now the point where they hopefully have actually peaked in terms of their debt load and will start to deleverage, as the financial analysts would say, to pay off those debts with the actual free cash flow. So what are your initial reactions? And I'm sure you saw some of the news after the earnings came out. So what is your take on their performance this quarter, just from the financial point of view?
I guess my initial reaction is those are big numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're always big numbers, but I'll tell you, my initial reaction is not quite related to this, but I saw like 10 Model 3s in my half mile walk from my bus to my apartment today. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of them, but I just happened to see a bunch of them like in a row. Because we had been talking about this and the earnings came out, so it was on my mind and I was kind of noticing them, and there are a lot of Model 3s around here. So
yeah,
I guess that's contributing to these numbers.
Absolutely. And I think that what's, especially around here in Palo Alto, we see a ton and I see them every day. And what's interesting is noticing new ones popping up, in neighbors, on the street and sort of in their, driveways. Because seeing them on the street when you're driving around, it's not always clear if it's the same person or same car or if it's people are visiting or what. But
I carry a paintball gun with me and I tag them. So I would recommend doing that, and it's pretty helpful.
But for me, I now see somewhere, I saw someone getting one delivered locally, like they had Tesla was delivering it nearby. And there's now two or three new ones in the past few weeks that are parked outside all the time. And some are performance, some are very base model, black with the black aero wheels and black interior. So, I've certainly noticed an increasing number of Model 3s just parked around. And also, I don't know if you've noticed too, but the demographic of people driving them is quite diverse. I mean, yeah. It seems pretty consistent just with the population here. It's not super dominated by
car guys.
Yeah, car guys or particularly younger folks or anything like that. It's I'm seeing all sorts of different people and families as well. Lots of car seats in them. So yeah, just sort of anecdotally, definitely seeing an increased number of density here as well. So
yeah, I saw a dark blue three go by today with the red T on it, mm-hmm. the performance thing. And oh my God, that looks terrible. Like they should have done something to set off that red T from the blue. Like those two colors, they just do not go well together. Like the way they've got them set up. I don't know, maybe need like a white outline or something around it.
On the front or the back? If it's red, someone just added, that's aftermarket. Chrome. The red piece is just the brake calipers.
Oh, okay. I thought the red T was the performance one.
Nope, just aftermarket. It just seems that a lot of people do it for some reason.
Well, then that was just a silly decision.
I wouldn't recommend it. So
I guess the question is, when will we start seeing some with some 24-inch spoilers coming off the back too, when they get all get the full California treatment.
Yeah, there'll be more and more modifications. I've seen some pretty crazy color ones and super dark tint ones as well. But given that the deliveries are increasing so much, it's just so interesting that Wall Street got their estimates so wrong because we get the deliveries. And the big reason that I think Wall Street really missed the targets, both on the revenue and more importantly on the earnings, was that the gross margin was so much better. So for the listeners, can you remind everyone sort of what gross margin means as we talk about this?
Wait, you keep asking the questions. I'm supposed to ask that and you're supposed to give an intelligent answer.
Ah, no, we can switch it up. You know what it is.
I will try and guess that the gross margin is the cost or the price that was paid for the vehicle minus the cost of actually manufacturing it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And then so if they sell the car for $60,000 and it only cost them $40,000 to make it, then they had a $20,000 gross margin.
Yep. And so the gross margins for Model 3 a few quarters ago were 0% because they were paying for a ton of labor and paying for the fixed costs of running the line. And so that led a lot of stories and folks to say, well, hey, Model 3 is not going to be profitable because they can't make it profitably. And, at that point, it was true.
It just reminds me of all of those kind of predictions remind me of the Simpsons, the classic Simpsons. There's a screenshot that goes around of it's a meme of Disco Stew with his projections for the sales of disco records. So he just extrapolates from 1975 to 1976 and then straight up from there. And so basically, it's zero, so it's going to stay zero. And
so then the last quarter got to a few percentage points, like five or so, and Tesla guided to 15%. And so people were like, well, you went from zero to five and a quarter, and now you're saying you're going to triple your margin? Uh-uh. And so people basically estimated around 10% margin. And what happened is Tesla not only hit 15%, they exceeded it. And so Model 3 margin came in at 20% this quarter. So that's huge because that's, the total blend for automotive margin was 25%. So they went from 21% blend last quarter to 25%. So Model S and X improved their margin and Model 3 dramatically improved their margin. And that's how they were able to generate so much more profit than Wall Street was expecting. And I think really just goes to show that even though they still had some struggles this quarter and they didn't produce at 5,000 per week, they were producing at around 4,200 per week when you exclude the scheduled downtime, that means Model 3 is one of the most profitable programs around, save for Porsches. And that's incredible, especially considering that pretty much every other electric car is a money-losing endeavor. It's quite dramatic.
Yeah. I guess the only caveat is that, as we all know, they're only selling the higher margin luxury models right now, right? Like they haven't actually gotten down to the much anticipated, I guess, lower cost models that will have lower margins.
That's true, and they did address that in the earnings call, and of course, folks asked about it. And so, one of the things that they described was that not only was the margin good because of production quality, but the margin was better because the mix was better, and that's just code for we sold a lot of all-wheel drive and performance. And so, those cars also have higher margin because adding in those extra motors don't cost as much as they are charging for you. And so those incremental dollars they charge for performance have higher margin, which pulls the overall margin up. So anyways.
And that white interior.
Yep. White interior, those things, not, there's no real physical reason why the white costs more, but it does. Some of the paint colors as well don't necessarily cost materially more or add that much more labor time. So those all help Tesla. Also the software, right? Autopilot has already been developed. And so adding it on is very low marginal cost. So those all contribute to it. But one of the things they called out was that the mix of performance was very similar to what they see on S and X. And so they tried to make it clear that S and X, the performance take rate wasn't so great that it was like half of the cars or anything like that. And now with the change to introduce the mid-range model and the higher priced cars only having all-wheel drive, I think they've kind of split the difference a bit there for the future. So now they now have a slightly higher starting price for their all-wheel drive and long range if you want it, and then a slightly lower price for the mid-range, but it also has lower component costs. So I think their expectation and what their guidance is that they will have similar margins going into the next quarter, but the average selling price might decrease slowly.
Do you think that as they do finally release or start selling the, what is it, the $35,000 Tesla?
Yep.
Once they start doing that, it seems like if I were in Tesla's position, I would not want to immediately satisfy all the demand for that vehicle, because then that'll really pull down my margins. Whereas, you know, there's enough demand for it, I might start just, I mean, they can control what they make off of the lines, right? So they can just start slowly folding in, like basically they can tune the number of models they're making or the mix of models they're making to hit the margins they want.
Yes. And the other thing is that by the time they start making the $35,000 vehicle, which they expect is still 6 months or so away into next year, that they will have a higher overall production rate as well on the others.
So it can absorb some of that.
Exactly. So the fixed costs will be absorbed even and spread across even more vehicles. So that's a big piece. And then the actual, one of the big reasons they can't do it yet is that the battery technology and the battery pack that they're designing for model for the short range isn't quite done. And so the, not necessarily the cell cost, but the pack and the electronics for the pack, they are going to be introducing a new version of that that should be a lot simpler to both manufacture and have fewer parts. So they still believe they have around 6 months or so work to go before they could introduce the Model 3 at that price point. But they are on the call. Elon did address it. They are still, you know, aiming to do that. They are going to introduce it. They are working as hard as they can to reduce the price overall. They do want to have a lower priced one because it doesn't serve them to just have a luxury car the same way that having just Model S and X wasn't really. While it has higher margin, there's a cap to how many people can afford those cars. And so I don't really buy the thesis that Tesla doesn't want to sell a $35,000 car, because clearly the demand as you go down in price increases much more quickly than linearly, because the average selling price of cars in the US is around $27,000. So at $55,000 or $60,000 sort of average selling price for Model 3 now, you're really double that price. So if you think that demand, I think this is a sort of a little bit of a tangent, but I do think that $35,000 car is coming. I believe them that they want to make it, but I think you're right. They are going to continue to control the margin and continue to sort of keep that 20-ish percent until they get that introduced.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Elon said their expectation is that the Model 3 short range, if you just order the very base version with no options, their target for that is for it to be 14% margin. So cost $30,000 to build and sell it for $35,000. And then obviously if you add in options, it will help pull that margin up because almost no one buys no options.
They were going to try and sell you the undercoating and the floor mats.
Yeah, they do have all-weather mats.
No, I guess my thought is, like, you know, there's going to be a given rate that they are producing Model 3s, give however many lines they might have running at that moment, and they'll just control the mix of what's coming off of those lines, and the amount of low-priced vehicles will be a factor of the rate coming off the line versus the margins they want to hit, right? So, like, I guess if you're, like, you know, the 400,000th person in line for your $35,000 Model 3, you know, it might be quite a while before you get it.
Yeah, exactly. And I as much as I think a lot of people want the $35,000 car, I don't think the demand for the cars that are shipping today will evaporate when the $35,000 car comes out, because a premium interior, autopilot, a paint color of your choosing, a longer range, those are all things that are, like, actually useful and have value to people. It's not as if these cars are artificially higher priced and the lower priced car is going to be exactly the same. So I don't think it will be a complete wash where everyone who is buying a car now would have bought the $35,000 one if they could. Many of the people who are buying them want the car. I mean, especially people who are buying all-wheel drive and people who are buying performance, they're not buying the cheapest one available today. And so if their goal was to minimize their costs, they would be buying a base model, you know, black, with black aero wheels and no autopilot, right? And they're not. So there clearly is demand in a range from $35,000 up to the $70,000-ish for the performance. So I'm not sure that's going to disappear. It's just there's going to be a whole new block which will allow them to go from around 4,500 cars a week to, you know, around 7,000 is sort of what their estimate is for the middle of next year. And this was interesting because remember how they had talked about 10,000 cars a week a lot on previous calls? they're not really talking about 10,000 a week very much anymore. And they were asked about it on the call, and Elon basically said, you know, we just continue to try and we're going to make more cars in Q4, but they didn't give a specific guidance. Last quarter, they gave guidance for the number of Model 3s. They said we'd make more and deliver more than Q3. So that's
good. Well, I think
good.
That shows they're learning. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's good. But I don't think we're going to have a massively larger number of Model 3s. I think they're just going to continue to improve the margin and the efficiency. And they expect that the lines they have now with minimal CapEx, so probably a couple $100 million more spending, could get to around 7,000 cars per week. So going from 4,500 to around 7,000, that's still a very large increase of 2,500 more cars per week, which over 50 weeks is, 125,000 more cars a year. At 50,000, I know, 55, it'll be $50,000, is another $6 billion a year in revenue. So that's a meaningful increase in production. It's just not that magic 10,000. And I think what they've realized is that to get to 10,000 in Fremont would require taking a lot of downtime and installing entirely new modules and lines for production.
Don't they still have the second, like, indoor line that got moved outside into the tent? Like, isn't that still?
It wasn't from inside moved out. It was just created outside. But they are using the outside GA4 still.
Right, but they were supposed to have two lines going inside, right? And, like, one of them was just, wasn't it, like, not working or wasn't, and they ended up, like, rebuilding a new one outside?
The thing that wasn't working inside was the conveyor system underneath the main line. But that was always just meant to move parts around. And so they elevated the actual production modules, like where the actual robots were. And then below was where all the parts were going to move on this like magic carpet thing. And so they took that conveyor system and used it to move the cars outside on a grade. So I actually think what's going to happen is that the China Gigafactory that's going to produce some cars is going to come online at the time when they would start needing more capacity than 7,000, and that the demand in the U.S. may not really surpass 7,000 per week and Canada, because, you know, steady state, that's still a lot of cars each year. And clearly there is some pent-up demand. So I think that the China Gigafactory will help absorb a fair amount of the Asia-Pacific capacity. And then Europe, I mean, I think they're still, I mean, they're going to have to turn on a Europe factory too, because Europe's premium sedans are twice as big as they are in the US in terms of sales. So it is going to be interesting to see when they really start capping out, but demand doesn't seem to be the issue right now. And if they're only targeting 7,500 or so or 7,000 in Fremont, they may be demand constrained, especially as they start turning on that $35,000 one, to your point. So they're going to be able to control that. And it may just be that the wait time for a $35,000 car is pretty substantial. And so you will be able to get a performance one, you know, within a couple weeks, and a $35,000 one in a couple months. And it will just sort of be unfair for a little while.
All right. Well, you mentioned the China Gigafactory. Did they talk about that at all in the call, or was that just based on the previous news?
No, they did. They said, in order to significantly increase the affordability of Model 3, we've decided to accelerate our manufacturing timeline in China. We are aiming to bring portions of Model 3 production to China during 2019 and to progressively increase the level of localization through local sourcing and manufacturing. Production in China will be designated only for local customers. So they are going to be producing Model 3s in China in 2019, next year. And so people will be like, how is that possible? It took the Gigafactory many years to be built, and New Me took years. How could they do this? And I think the important thing to realize is that there's two things happening. One, the tariffs are making a material impact on Tesla's sort of profit margins for all the cars going to China. Sorry, there's two things. There's the tariffs that are for parts from China that are being brought to the US that are making all the cars more expensive, which they don't like. But then there's also extra tariffs that are being imposed on cars from outside China going into China that are like 20, 30, 40%. And so
there's a tariff on the parts as they come in and then get assembled into a car. And then the finished car has a tariff on it when it goes back out.
Yes.
Okay.
And as a result, if Tesla has now purchased some land in Shanghai to build a small factory. Well, I say small. It'll be producing around, it's slated to produce 250,000 cars a year, Model 3 and Model Y.
So small for China, but
small for China,
huge for everywhere else.
Yeah. And what I expect they're going to do is take the minimum amount required to like do final assembly to claim that the car was made in China, and ship all the parts and everything else they need from the main Gigafactory in Sparks, and also from Fremont, and basically set up just like a very basic tent-like general assembly four in China, just to get things going, and then progressively ramp it up. So
that'll be fun in the humidity of Shanghai. Oh,
well, I think it might be in an actual full building because they're pretty good at building buildings quickly there. But the land is being leveled. The land has already been secured. And so I think this will be actually quite interesting to see, because I don't believe many people understand what's happening yet. But it's not as if they're going to be building a Fremont-style factory from scratch and then turning it on and making it all happen. It's going to be a very progressive system of, hey, we've now got a building and we're going to start doing some very basic assembly so we can claim these are made in China, and then over time continue to build out the capacity for full-on production, from battery packs to the actual full, you know, welding and paint shop and all that. So keep an eye on that, but it will be quite useful for them from a competitive standpoint to be able to produce there and own the factory 100%, where every other American automaker has a joint venture.
Yeah, I think, I mean, coming from the software world, what I think is really interesting about this, and I'm sure, I guess maybe you can tell me if this was addressed on the call, but I'm almost positive it would not be, is the operating in China has, as a software company, as a data storage company, as a company that has essentially like surveillance technology in that Tesla knows where your cars are, can communicate with the cars. The cars have cameras on them. They're storing data. Like, I wonder how much they have to provide to the government to be able to sell their cars there, since they are essentially, I mean, they're computers on wheels. And you know, Ford might not have that issue because it's more of just a dumb car. But once you start getting into Tesla, you start getting into all this. I mean, you can't miss it in the news this past year about different software companies in California running into problems trying to operate in China.
Yeah, I do think that I know they have some issues with the autopilot and maps, extra regulation. And there's some very strict regulations around mapping the streets of China and exporting that. So I do know they have some challenges there. But I think ultimately they will have to set up some more local operations, as pretty much all these tech companies have had to do.
Be interesting to see if their California workers have some sort of revolt if they learn that, yeah, you know, Tesla is providing the locations of drivers to the government, or, you know, the kind of thing that's been in the news lately. So it'll
it'd be a good separate episode to dig in on what they're doing already, because I don't know as much as I should about what is special about the Tesla UI and data collection in China. They may just actually kind of opt to do less, which would put them at a disadvantage for overall autopilot usage. But you can just choose not to participate. But for many companies, that's not an option. So
yeah,
play by the rules.
It'll be interesting to see. It's just not something car companies have had to really deal with.
True. One of the other things that did come up on the call was this idea that, as we've talked about in the past, that Tesla has this unique advantage now where they can make the cars, deliver them to customers, and that can happen faster than they have to pay for the parts that went into the car. And so in that way, you actually can use the money and the loan from the parts, essentially, to pay for the car and then pay the suppliers back without actually having the money yourself. So sort of using it like a credit card and paying it off every period. And that allows you to grow really quickly because you don't have to actually have that capital to build that incremental car ahead of getting the money from customers.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that they basically are getting all of their parts, like, let's say, like net 90 or something, where they have to pay the suppliers within 90 days. And then, but it only takes them, say, like, you know, a week to make the car, a week to deliver it. Then that means like they've got, you know, 90 minus 14. They've got like, you know, 76 days.
Yeah.
of just kind float. Of holding on to that money.
Yes. Yes. And float is how Amazon has done extremely well. It's how insurance companies do extremely well. It's how banks do extremely well. Is this?
Well, insurance companies are a scam. I mean, that's not the same thing.
No, but it is the same thing. Yeah. It is the same thing. You know that you're getting a premium and you pay the premium and it's extremely long, right? You may not have to pay that premium back for years in aggregate. And so anyways, Tesla has been doing this, and the new thing they're realizing is that while they have about 60 days to pay back, the next important thing is they want to go from, as Elon's been digging into the logistics part of things. Remember last quarter, they were having some trouble getting all the cars to people fast enough because the logistics system had never had to deal with this many vehicles, that he was realizing that it was taking around 30 days from production to delivery in North America, which he felt was embarrassingly long. And so by the end of the quarter, they got it from 30 days down to 20 days, so a third reduction. And in Q4, the goal is to go to 10 days from factory to customer. So that will decrease their sort of interest on capital by around $750 million. Like, it's $750 million in assets that they can, you know, deploy for other purposes if they can do it 10 days faster. Because basically they do $75 million worth of product a day.
Right.
So every 10 days is $750 million that's not tied up, which then they can do more with. So this is going to be a huge efficiency, capital efficiency, because they have this thing called like an asset-backed loan. And so the banks will loan them the money for some of the other parts of the car, because it, you know, the supplier part is a meaningful part, but there's also the other capital that goes into paying for the car. So they do use other loans to pay for the remainder before they get money from the customer. And so they have to pay interest on that. And so they've got like many, many tens of millions of dollars a quarter in interest. And so that also will help the margin if they can just deliver the car faster. So really, really intriguing to kind of learn more of these details and see that Tesla wants to keep pushing on this. I mean, one of the benefits of their direct model is they can get it to the customer so quickly, and it's not sitting around waiting to be picked up by a dealer or something like that.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome. One thing you said that kind of stuck with me is, you know, you said their logistics system has never had to deal with this volume before. And, you know, while that is technically true, they know what the forecast was, right? Like, they're actually below what their forecast was. So, you know, whoever is running their logistics system should have known that they actually, like, you know, a year ago intended to be making more vehicles than they're making now. So, like, I guess this comes back to this whole thing about, like, Elon having to come in and fix things all the time. It's like, how are they not employing people, putting people in positions to run this stuff to get it working beforehand? Like, that's what I don't quite understand. It's not like they just randomly, like, you know, struck oil or something and they're having trouble figuring out where to put all this black gold that's bubbling out of the earth or something. It's like they had a plan where they were going to be making 5,000 cars a week by, what, the beginning of it, 2018. How could they not have also then had a plan to distribute all those vehicles? Like, doesn't that seem strange?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, we know that, like, trying to optimize for scale ahead of it happening is challenging.
Oh, yeah, and, no doubt. It's difficult, but I mean, you know, there are companies that do it.
Well, I'm not so sure, actually. I don't think you have many companies that triple their usage in a 3-month period.
No. I mean, there are companies that distribute that many vehicles.
Yeah, but that's not the problem. I think they'll have far fewer issues this period doing the same number. It won't be as stressful. It's the burstiness and going through it the very first time, and the learning rate on that is so steep that it was just a big shock to go from 15,000 Model 3s to 50,000 Model 3s.
Yeah, I guess I dispute the word shock, because that was the plan. So it's not a shock. I mean, they should have had a plan. They should have, you know, I mean, obviously, if you're a startup and you're all learning things for the first time, sure. But they're an established public company. They should have hired people who had this, like, expertise and built out a system so that when those vehicles were coming off the assembly line, they had a plan for getting them out to the people.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The fact that they, like, ran out of delivery trucks, car carriers in the quarter and started building their own.
I know, and they're below their projections. That's what's so mental. It's like, they're not even, like, where they said they would be. Like, what would have happened if they would have hit that?
No, they wouldn't. I mean, it would have. I think they were spending almost all of their attention on production and very little on any of the subsequent steps. And now they're going to the next bottleneck. I think it really is just sort of optimization of bottlenecks and not really thinking about. I just don't think they were really spending much time with a lot of the executives who could help on some of these areas. Let those other teams fend for themselves.
Man, if I were a shareholder, that would be what would really bother me. Is like, these are not like I say, this is not like an act of God or some sort of unforeseen circumstance. It's like, you know, you're just executing your plan at a rate lower than expected and still failing. Like, that's what seems crazy.
But to counter it, they did deliver so many more cars, and they did it with way more profit margin than people expected. So, I mean, you're asking them to have done it even better than they did, which They could, but these are still remarkable results, no?
No,
the actual results are strong. And so while it was maybe a little bit of a cluster, it still turned out.
So, I mean, the results are strong, but they're also what they projected, right? Like, that's the margins that they said they were going to hit. It's just like no one really believed them, but that's what they said. And I don't know. I guess it's more.
I mean, it was
just
still a third better. I mean, it was 20% versus 15%.
Okay. Yeah. I guess it's just like my concerns about the company is that, like, you know, you're a car company, and that doesn't mean just manufacturing a car. You have to like manufacture it and deliver it and support it. And I guess like it just seems like that should have been. I mean, you know, it's you know, hey, great, you know, Tesla's doing great things. They're you know, supporting our getting us away from fossil fuels. So, you know, they've got that whole like scrappy underdog thing going on.
Yeah, I don't think you need to use that. Yeah,
it feels like it's just like that should be like, you know, I mean, to go to football, like it's blocking and tackling, right? Those are the basics, right? Like you should be. I mean, it seems insane that you might have a billions dollar company and they had a plan and everyone was focused on manufacturing cars, but not then distributing them or didn't have a sufficient plan for that. Like that just seems, I'm not like, you know, obviously I couldn't do this any better. Like, so I'm not like, you know, saying that.
I agree.
But it just seems odd, right? Like it's not like they are. You know, they have a lot of money, they have people, they've been manufacturing cars. Like, it just seems weird. Maybe that's the right word. It's just a little bit weird. I mean, I'm glad they're figuring it out. It just seems weird that they didn't have a plan or a sufficient plan beforehand. I don't know. I'll stop belaboring that. But it just seems, with a bunch of these things, where it just seems like they're running into things where it should have just been worked out before, I guess.
I would say my counterpoint on this would be that I still feel that even Apple in the past few years has still had issues with their first day iPhones, with activations, with lines for, you know, queuing to get the product, not having enough product, not being able to forecast it. And they've been selling it for a decade.
Like, for Apple, it would be like if they were making a million iPhones a month, and but they only could make 50,000 boxes. Like, that's kind of what it sounds like to me. It's like whoever was running the packaging program didn't realize we'd actually be making a million, even though the prediction was we're going to make a million. And they only had 50,000 boxes to put them in. And then instead, they're trying to figure out how we can package these things to hand them to customers.
Well, part
like,
of it,
that's
too,
what it seems no, like. But, it's weird. It's like, it's
no, but
planning.
Part of it, too. Yeah, but part of it, too, is the... It's not something that's completely independent, because customers prefer to pick up cars on the weekends. Customers can only come on certain times. They need to know when the car is actually going to be ready. They were most strongly producing cars towards the back part of the quarter. And so, like, the actual logistics of getting a customer to be there at the correct time and take the car in a set amount of space, especially over all these cars over one, like, just the US and a little bit of Canada. I do think there are like some things around going through that like actual mechanical process of what is it like to deliver this many cars per day. And it's the same thing with like the iPhones. It's like, well, it just takes a certain amount of time to set up an iPhone, and there's going to be some lines, and you either add more staff who are less prepared or you have longer lines, but it does work itself out eventually because you go back to a more steady state. And the other piece I would say is that, and Tesla recognizes this, is that they acknowledge they had these issues with logistics, but it is certainly their view is it's certainly a far simpler issue to solve than the manufacturing problems they were experiencing with Model 3. And one of the main ways they're planning to do it is by doing deliveries to customers, so that they don't have to make sure they come to a delivery center. And that's actually cheaper for them to have someone drive the car over to the person and have it meet them at work or at home, so that they don't have to do this big coalescing on the weekends in the evenings, which creates these big spikes.
Do they have to pay a royalty to Enterprise Rent-A-Car for the we'll pick
apparently
you
up? They're using Uber and Lyft to get back.
Oh, all right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I guess maybe the real problem is the autopilot team has been slacking so much. Otherwise, the cars could just drive themselves to the
yeah, they should. Speaking of autopilot, I wanted to touch on that before we wrap.
Yeah, let's move on to something else.
The autopilot team was on the call again So last time they were on the call for the very first time, which was very cool, and the same folks were on this time. They didn't speak as broadly. And last time we learned about the AI chip, remember, that they were going to be building, and that they had some big autopilot updates coming. And so we now had information from Stuart Bowers, who leads the autopilot software. And so he was talking about how they're rolling out the Navigate on Autopilot feature, which I've been able to use a little bit with a friend's vehicle.
And what is that?
It basically, you type in your destination, and when you get on the highway and turn on autopilot, it tells you which lanes you should be in and will suggest the lane to be in for you, and you confirm you want to change lanes with your turn signal. And so basically, like, if you're doing an interchange from 101 to 280 and you're in the far left lane, it will get you over to the right lane for the interchange in time, like a few minutes ahead of time, and because it knows what lanes it needs to be in, and it will take more aggressive turning exchanges and things like that, and then take you into the right lane for exits, for the final exit for your destination. Right now, it requires you to confirm the lane change, but they will soon have a way to waive that, so the car will just move on the highway by itself.
Does it take the exit by itself as well?
Yes, it does. Yeah, and so then when you get to the end of the exit, you have to take over. Huh. It's pretty spooky. The same way I felt when I first used autopilot, where I felt a little spooked out, this feature feels like that again. It's pretty cool. Right now, when you have to actually use the turn signal to engage it, it doesn't have much utility because you already have to know what lane to be in and things like that. But I think once it actually starts changing lanes for you without you having to hit the turn signal, and you're just monitoring the same way you monitor autopilot, I think people will really go kind of crazy for it. It's pretty cool. So that's coming soon. And the other area they're spending a lot of time on is on active safety. So now that they've activated all the cameras for the first time in version 9 of the software, they also have a whole bunch of new features that will be coming out to help basically avoid many of the accidents they see in Teslas, that, and also accidents that are common across automotive incidents, and using autopilot for more active safety features. So we sort of touched on this a little bit on the last call, but I'm kind of excited to see what other safety features they can introduce. So one very minor one they added was this sudden acceleration mitigation, where a lot of people would accidentally hit the accelerator thinking they're hitting the brake when they're stopped and run into something. And we saw all these stories of people running into buildings and into shops and things and claiming autopilot was on or something crazy happened. Tesla obviously has the data, and they saw people stepped on the accelerator instead of the brake. So they've now introduced a feature that if autopilot detects an object in front of you and you hit on the accelerator, it won't go. So there's going to be more features like that coming. So
like
that'll
when
be
you're
great.
In autopilot or at
no,
any
just
time?
Any time when you're moving slowly, it'll prevent you from. It will attempt to prevent you from running into stuff.
That same case. This seems like a plot point for some sort of Hollywood thriller or something too, where if you're trying to get away in your Tesla and the someone is standing in front of your vehicle, like threatening you.
Yeah, I think
you actually will not be able to just run them down.
I think they will introduce that sort of thing, because they also mentioned that Summon is going to start using autopilot cameras instead of just the ultrasonics. And I bet they are going to, I mean, it makes no sense, right? Like, if you just think about it, there's no reason you should be able to run your car off a cliff. There's no reason you should be able to run your car into someone.
Dude, you would totally kill the plot of Thelma and Louise.
I know, but I'm just saying, in a Tesla, you shouldn't be able to do that. And I think they clearly have they will have the capabilities to prevent those sorts of things. Another one of like drifting, having your car drift from your lane into someone else's lane and hitting a car. I mean, now with the side cameras, they can prevent that.
I think you meant like Tokyo Drift.
Oh, sorry. No. Just like someone falling asleep at the wheel.
Because if you could prevent that would be cool too. Yeah. I guess Tesla is already preventing people from putting those. People are preventing, you can't put a one of those awful loud mufflers on your Tesla. So
that's true.
You could put it on. It just won't do anything.
You can put puddle lights in neon, though. So you've got plenty of power.
I don't really care about that. It's more the noise externality that really offends me.
That's true. So one of the other team members, Pete Bannon, who's a former Apple person who worked on the A series of chips, has been working on hardware 3. And he was very direct and clear, saying that the design is continuing moving along. Over the last quarter, they've completed qualification of the silicon, so the actual chip itself, qualification of the board, which would be the silicon plus the other chips for the board that's actually going inside the Tesla. And they've started the manufacturing line qualification, and they're also validating the provisioning flows in the factory. So
where are they manufacturing it?
I'm not sure. I bet they're... I wonder if they're using Supermicro. They make the motherboards. Yeah. I'm not sure who they're using to make the actual chip. It's probably going to be Samsung or TSMC, but I'm not sure. It may be a smaller person. But they are also now starting to test taking those boards and putting them into Model 3s, Model S's and Model X's on the factory to validate the fit and finish of the parts and the provisioning flows. So that's all basically saying, like, they're actually now taking prototype boards and figuring out, like, in the production process, where do they go, where are they staged, and they've now tested a lot of Model 3s and Model X's and Model X's with the new hardware in it. So this is all going well, and they're still targeting and they're on track to have it ready to go by the end of Q1. So one of the few programs that Tesla's talked about that is, you know, in advance, it still seems to be on target. So that's really, really great news.
Cool.
And again, it's going to have roughly 1,000% increase in processing capability compared to the current stuff. And it costs about the same. It has the same physical power requirements and volume. So it's just going to be a drop-in replacement for the cars on the line. And existing owners will be able to get it serviced for about, you know, in 30 minutes, they'll just be able to get it replaced. So if you have a Model 3 right now, or you have a Model S or X that was built like in late 2016, you will be able to go get this upgrade. If you've already paid for full self-driving when you purchase your car, it will be free. Otherwise, it will be a cost to upgrade this board. But what's interesting is that then Andre Karpathy, the AI guy, got on. And so he works on the neural networks. And one thing he mentioned in there that is not a feature publicly described was he said, I work on the neural networks that identify cars, lane lines, traffic lights, traffic signs, and so on. The Teslas don't do anything with traffic signs or traffic lights so far with their neural networks. So a little bit of a leak, some stuff that's coming. So I think we've all guessed. I mean, you and I have guessed for months that something has to be coming with traffic lights and traffic signs. But
yeah,
good to hear that, you know, his team is recognizing them. Whether or not they're actually doing anything in the path planning part is yet to be seen.
All right. And he's not concerned they're going to become self-aware?
No, not concerned. And the other thing is that he also described that there's one network that's running in the car now that's serving all the cameras. But they have a much larger network that, because it has so many more neurons, it will have higher precision and higher accuracy of recognition. And it's too large of a network to run on the current hardware. And so that he and the team are extremely excited about getting the new hardware, because then they can deploy this new network. And so that's kind of interesting to me, because it almost sort of indicates a sort of fork that's going to be coming, where the network that's out there now is kind of going to be this mini version, and they're all really excited about this new big, like super large network, which is sort of the trend now.
And you want the smart car, not the slow cousin.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know, because if enhanced autopilot if the new network is also intended for enhanced autopilot like capabilities, like enhanced autopilot still benefits from being able to recognize more cars quickly, and not just for full self-driving, then it's going to be weird if you're an enhanced autopilot customer and you don't upgrade your board. Like, are you going to be running an old network that's not going to get much love anymore because they're only focused on this new? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it's not something that, I mean, to go back to Apple, that's just not something that consumers are going to understand, right? That's not going to be, you know, I paid for autopilot. Why am I not getting autopilot? I don't think people are going to understand, like, you know, well, your neural network, your neural processing chip in your car isn't quite smart enough. So, you know, you're stuck in the Forrest Gump lane.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that's going to, I don't know. That seems like more of a comms issue, like a public relations thing. Like if they're selling autopilot and some of the autopilots are smart enough to be autopilots and some of them are just kind of a little bit more dopey, I guess.
Yeah. If you have enhanced autopilot that's limited, because they already have this issue with the autopilot one cars, right? Those cars aren't getting nearly as many upgrades. So why would they, they're going to end up having like another branch where you're going to have folks who have autopilot one, autopilot two, and then autopilot three, but autopilot two and three both run enhanced autopilot, but autopilot three runs enhanced autopilot better with more functionality and full self-driving. It's a little strange.
It seems like it could even be dangerous too if people aren't quite clear on what the capabilities are and they might overestimate the capabilities of a slower system.
Yeah, I really wish all of the cars that had all the cameras would have this new board, but it really does sound like it's going to be this optional, like semi-optional thing where you either can pay more to enable this full self-driving, but...
Well, until the class action suit, and then maybe Everyone will have to get it.
Maybe. What's interesting is that not only is he talking about it sort of theoretically, Andre Caparthy also said, we are currently at a place where we train large neural networks that work very well, but we are not able to deploy them to the fleet due to computational constraints. So all of this will change with the next iteration of the hardware. And it's a massive step improvement in the compute capability, and the team is incredibly excited to get these networks out there. Which, doesn't this make it sound like they've been holding this all this stuff back? There's all this great stuff, and the hardware in the cars that they designed, that they've been using NVIDIA chips for, can't use it. And it's almost as if their team is working on things for the future that, like, enhanced autopilot doesn't even do what they said it would do 2 years ago
right.
on the hardware that's shipping now. And they're already moving on to the new hardware. But many of those customers aren't going to get it. It is a little bit disappointing, I guess. And I don't even have one of these cars. It's just I can foresee what's going to happen. And I think a lot of people who didn't pay for full self-driving are going to be disappointed. Because I think the price is going to be even higher to get this board than just, like, full self-driving. The price of that is going to go up from $3,000 or $4,000 for sure. And so you're going to have to pay more. And then that's great. But if you don't opt for the new board, I'm not sure enhanced autopilot is really going to get as far as it was advertised. So that's right. My concern. Well,
and I mean, ultimately, I would be extremely surprised if, you know, the first gen of their custom silicon handled everything. Like there's going to be
another version too.
Yeah, another version and versions after that. And I mean, you know, it takes a while to iterate. And I mean, just things get better and faster even without improvements. You know, the die size shrinks and I'm not sure what size they're using here, but you know, presumably they're not using the smallest thing available. It just seems like this is, I mean, we're in the, it's like when you look at the, I mean, just, I guess we always bring everything back to Apple, but you know, you just look at the incredible advances that happen under the hood with their like world-class chip team. You know, they're at what, the A12 now, and you know, the A10 when it came out was unbelievable, and then like the A11 came out and it's like, wow, this is making the A10 look ridiculous, and now the A12 is out, and that's on an annual release cycle, which is, I mean, pretty mental on its own. But it just, and you know, they're a very experienced team. It seems to strain credulity to think that Tesla is going to hit it out of the park and have a, you know, 10-year life cycle on their first piece of silicon.
Right. And so what is the, it almost begs the question that the autopilot needs to be like a subscription service, some way that you actually are more guaranteed to be running the latest hardware, because...
Yeah, they just swap that out every year. Or
exactly, right. Well, whenever, so that the entire fleet can be refreshed, so that because they're going to want to deploy new features, and we're still so early in the development of this that it's not as if, like, okay, if you have an iPhone 10 or a 10S, there really isn't that much functional difference to the type of apps you can run. But the difference between an iPhone 1 and an iPhone 5 is huge. And that's like a more than a 10x difference. And so I really am curious to understand what their strategy is for this, if they've thought it through, or if they're just like, we're just going to barrel ahead and, you know, customers that want to come along, we'll give them the option to upgrade their computer. But I just don't know how they're going to segment the feature set. Like, having different features based on limited parts of Autopilot based on your hardware, that's going to cause some confusion. And I'm not trying to make it a bigger deal than it is. It's just, as you and I have worked in software, like having to deal with different deployment capabilities of clients is not fun. And
it's going to slow down their Autopilot team.
Yeah, it slows down Autopilot development, because you either have to say, we're going to have to optimize this for the slower cars, or only work on things for the next version and get excited about the next version. And that's my issue right now, is they seem to already be working on things for the next version, but no one has that hardware, and almost no one's going to have it for 7 or 8 months. So are they really working as hard as they can on the current networks? I can't believe they are. Just doesn't pass the sniff test if they're already excited about the new models they've got. So
yeah,
ultimately it's great that they are at least going to have 10x the capacity, right? Like, that's great that there will be cars that Tesla has. And Tesla talked about how, and Elon reaffirmed, like, they do still believe in this Tesla network idea of Tesla running a fleet of vehicles that compete with Uber and Lyft and other, like, Cruise and other self-driving car companies to provide ride hailing. And they will also allow customers to put their own vehicles into the fleet as well and make some money off of that. And they continue to plan to do this. And Elon believes that because they'll have the most vehicles out there, they will have a really big competitive advantage. The missing piece is the actual self-driving software. I mean, having lots of cars out there that may or may not be able to handle the sensing needs is one question, but actually having the software that can complete a ride is one of the first fundamental pieces. And even companies that can spend whatever they want on the hardware still are not yet at a place where they can deploy it to large amounts of people. So I understand in, like, perfect principles what he's saying, how that makes sense, but they don't have self-driving software yet that you can just get in and it drives you somewhere. So it's a cool idea, but I'm not sure that's exactly how it will play out. So, but we hadn't heard about the Tesla network in a long time, and at least it's still a plan.
Yeah, although, I mean, it seems even stranger if there's going to be different levels of functionality. And, you know, would you feel comfortable getting in a hailing a Tesla if you're not necessarily sure which, like, competency level you're going to be getting? Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe
I think they would definitely have to be like, you must be running the latest and greatest hardware. But I don't even think it's going to be this chip. I think that's probably the biggest. I would be surprised. I'd be curious to know if Elon believes that this is the chip that's going to get him there. And if he does believe that, my hunch is that's going to be wrong. And the other thing is, they're saying that this new hardware is not going to change anything about the sensors. So they're not saying they need any more redundant radar, no more cameras or better resolution cameras. So that's also really interesting. So we haven't seen any other major player migrate to a Tesla-type strategy for sensing in the 2+ years that they've been out there saying that. So
right, and if it takes, like, you know, 5 years for this to happen, and, like, you know, in 3 years from now, like, solid-state LiDAR gets cheaper, like,
yeah,
what happens there? Is Tesla just going to ignore that because they're on this path, or are they going to, like, say, hey, we can get this cheap LiDAR modules now, so let's add this in because that's going to, you know, benefit the current vehicles? Yeah, I don't know. I guess whenever you put a stake in the ground for any sort of future functionality, it seems like these are the problems you're going to have.
Yeah, and I don't think this is unique to Tesla. It's just any technological, exactly like you said, like, there's just no, it's extremely difficult to predict what technical requirements will be for an undefined problem and technical solution. It's just really, really hard. Especially when you say you want to support an existing customer base, because now you have legacy customers to deal with, which slows down your progress.
Yeah, I mean, unless you support them by just upgrading everyone, but yeah.
And not only that, they are trying to deploy these things broadly. I mean, one of the reasons that the drive on autopilot wasn't released in version 9 when Elon said it would be multiple times, he was like, well, we need to validate it more. It's like, really? You guys couldn't have predicted that you'd need to validate it more? Like, you really? And then, and
it
now
comes
he's
back
saying,
to the planning.
And now he's saying that you can't roll it out in Europe yet because the lane lines are different. It's like,
Everyone knows that Europe just changed those lane lines last week, right? I mean, they couldn't have possibly known that the lane lines were different.
It's interesting. I don't think they're intentionally going slow. So if you assume it's going to take the same amount of constant time, they can either wait and release it for everyone or release it in batches. But to be incorrect in your assessment of it so often is a little bit...
Well, and
doesn't
they're
pass
like
a sniff test.
Yeah, and they're an outlier in their confidence. That's what's weird. It's like everyone is saying, "Hey, this thing is going to be really hard," and they're saying, "No, no, we can do this. This is no problem." And then 6 months later, they're saying, "Whoa, this is way harder than we thought it was. No one could have guessed that it would be this hard." And you know, that's just kind of repeating in all sorts of different areas, like manufacturing, logistics, autopilot. It seems weird.
So before we wrap up, I mean, I feel like we've definitely been critical of some things, and I think that's good, especially in light of a really strong quarter, because I would say that I feel more confident. I would say this. I feel like now Tesla is at the point I expected they would be maybe 6 months ago or a year ago. And so I was ahead of reality in my expectation for Tesla from when we started the show.
You're living in the future. You're 20 minutes in the future, Caleb.
But I will also say that the core thesis I've had for why Tesla would succeed has continued to, you know, converge on reality, that things have played out more to the way I thought they would than most other skeptics thought would turn out, right? Like, remember when we started the show, it was the Model 3 unveil. And they were making 20,000 or so vehicles a quarter. And now we're at 80,000 vehicles. I mean, it's just kind of nuts. And they're now going to be profitable pretty much always going forward unless some weird event happens. And even just a few 6 months ago, there was calls that Tesla was going to go bankrupt. So I feel like there's a lot of risk that's been pulled out of the business, and this is a really strong milestone for that. And I really do think it's a turning point that all the fixed costs, all the staff, all the R&D, all the service centers, all the superchargers, that what we've talked about on all these earnings calls, the fixed costs were quite large. They were built to scale to a certain size, and the revenue just wasn't there to support that level of spend. In conjunction with a large amount of capital expenditure for the factories, led to a lot of investment, and you could view investment as burning cash in the negative sense or investment in the positive sense, and now they're starting to see the fruits of that. The next big question is, how much more quickly can they continue to grow? Because going from 4,500 to 5,000 to 5,500, like they're not saying they're going to have nearly the same growth rate in Model 3. And so they're not going to have these nutty increases anymore until like Model Y starts. So the next couple quarters will be, you know, increases in revenue and profits, but not dramatic, I don't expect. And so it'll be interesting to see how they do operationally. We're still quite far behind on autopilot, just generally, and it's still super important. But overall, I think they're doing extremely well as a company. And now that they won't have as large percentage changes in the growth rate, I hope they can sort of absorb some of the craziness they've had and get more stable, to your point around, you know, being able to predict what they need to do each day and each week and each month. So I'm quite happy about how things are going. And I think the quarter was really strong. And I think the earnings call, just sort of from a meta level, was more serious, more direct, very candid, and not very, there weren't that many Muskisms or rude comments or anything like that. It was just pretty basic and not even that much hand-wringing or poking at other companies. It was pretty just down the middle of the road. So from that point of view, I think it was pretty good for stability.
Cool. So what would you give your, it's time for letter grades, I guess. We've been going for a while here. What would, how would you grade this quarter?
I would give this my highest grade yet. I would give it an A.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think you can, they beat Wall Street's expectations. They beat their own guidance. And the core future elements, like we didn't even talk about it, but they also, Elon just approved the design for the Model Y to go into start building some prototypes. So remember at the Model 3 unveil in 2016, they had, you know, I think like two or three prototypes for people to drive around in, or be driven in rather. That is what will be coming out in March. So probably 5 months or so, there'll be Model Y, and then we can start getting excited about Model Y, and that's going to be even bigger than Model 3. So they've got Model Y coming. They've got the Semi is still making progress. They've got Roadster. Elon's super excited about the Tesla pickup truck, and they still have solar roof.
It's weird how excited he is about that.
He's really excited about it. Yeah.
It's just a little bit strange.
It is definitely intriguing how excited. I mean, it's the most popular vehicle type in the US, but he doesn't seem like a pickup truck person. So the fact he's so excited about it is really intriguing. So their product pipeline is really deep, and most of those cars, save for the Roadster, should be very high volume. Even the Semi could be relatively high volume. So I'm quite excited about the future prospects. And if you just think about the company on a valuation basis, at around $4 billion at $7 billion annualized, you're at about $24 billion. And their current market cap's around $50 billion or so. So that's only 2x sales. That's not a ridiculous valuation. So I don't think they're in this crazy, nutty valuation world anymore, especially with the profits as well. So I would give them an A, both on what they delivered, how they beat expectations, and where they're set up to go. I think Q4 will be a little bit trying, because it's real. I don't think they have that much upside potential. I think they really only have like operational downside risk where the mix isn't as good as people modeled. Something goes wrong with some of the profit margins, or just something wacky happens. So I think Q4 could be.
Maybe they should have a Black Thursday sale.
Yeah, I think Q4 won't look as amazing as this in retrospect, but
Black Friday.
Yeah,
sorry.
Black Friday. Yeah, yeah.
Or Cyber Monday, because they're Tesla.
That's true. They could have Cyber Monday. But I'm not sure exactly what will happen that in Q4. I hope we have. I hope they do a couple. I think they'll probably end up doing. I don't know. Maybe another. Maybe 10,000. I'm gonna say like 700 times 50. Yeah, I think they're probably gonna do another 8,000 or so Model 3s in the quarter. So they'll probably do something around 65,000. Say 65,000 Model 3s, which isn't that big of a jump.
Is Santa going to be putting a Model 3 under Caleb's tree this year?
If they offer leasing, I might take another look at it. But now the last big thing for me is leasing.
Okay. They're almost there.
So, Mike, where can people find us and share their thoughts?
Oh, right. Yeah. If you'd like to, we are on the World Wide Web at thetesla.com. You can listen to our episodes, peruse our drink list and drink along, and leave comments. We also have a subreddit on reddit.com/thetesla. And if you still haven't deleted your account, we are on Twitter at thetesla.
And if you are planning to buy a Model S, X, or Model 3
or Y
in the future, you can use the referral code in the show notes. It's from our friends at the Tesla Geeks, and you can get 6 months free supercharging, totally free. And then it helps us get invited to events like the Model Y unveil. So hopefully we can go to that event. So thank you for your help there. But otherwise, I will talk to you again in the future, Mike.
In the future. to the future.
To the future.
All right.
Later. Bye.